Fan on Demand.
I'm John Molinaro, and you're listening to Soccer Central Radio on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. On tonight's show, even though the Women's World Cup is more than a year away, 2014 will prove to be a crucial year in the preparations for the Canadian women's team as it tries to duplicate the success it achieved in London 2 years ago. Here to talk about it is Canadian women's coach John Herdman. We'll also be talking with Danny Dicchio, former Toronto FC forward and current coach of TFC's under-19 team, about the Reds' youth academy system and the current crop of prospects. That and so much more over the next 60 minutes on Soccer Central Radio. Thanks for joining us. Belated Happy New Year to all of you and yours in 2014. May it bring happiness, prosperity, good times, and hopefully a playoff berth for Toronto FC. No James Sharman tonight as he's still on Christmas holidays. Sitting in for Sharms is the esteemed Kurt Larson, TFC beat reporter for the Toronto Sun. Kurt, how are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me again.
Thanks for coming on. How was your holidays?
I worked a lot, so not good. Didn't see much family. Didn't see much of anything except for my my desk at work and the computer screen.
Well, at least you made some money.
That I did.
As I said at the top of the show, 2014 is going to be an important year for the Canadian women's team ahead of next summer's World Cup. And even though there's no meaningful games per se, it's going to be very important for the women's team to gain some momentum before it stages the tournament next year. Here to talk about it is John Herdman, coach of the Canadian women's team. John, happy new year to you. How are you?
Hey, thanks again, and happy new year to you and all the listeners.
Thanks very much. Well, listen, you're going to be playing a number of exhibition tournaments and games this year, including a friendly against the U.S. in Dallas later this month. How do these games fit into your plan with regards to preparing the team for next summer's World Cup?
Look, I think every single game has a meaning and importance. I think when you go into a build-up without a qualification, you have to make sure that you can guarantee that those games have got real purpose for the players and for our program. And I think heading into this year, we know that it's time to get some momentum moving. As you said right at the beginning, the momentum's important for the team. We had a year this year of making sure we've got the right people on the bus. And I think now that we've had a good look at all the talent pool that's, I guess, hasn't been looked at appropriately throughout my time when I was building up for the Olympics 2012, we certainly can't use that as an excuse now. We've cast the net really wide and hopefully found, you know, the players we want to work with now that could produce us a home World Cup win.
Have you set any goals for the year? I mean, is it just strictly about the performance level of the team, or is it also about, you know, actually achieving results on the field?
Well, I think the key is going to be you could be in great form in 2014 or 2015, you know, but the only time that's going to matter are those seven games when we get to the World Cup. I think that's the bottom line. Whatever form that you have now won't make a difference. I mean, this team finished last in a Women's World Cup only 9 months before the Olympic bronze medal. So I think it all matters when you get in and around that tournament stage. But I think in terms of goals this year, every game, every minute on the pitch has been carefully mapped out to ensure that when we get to the team to the World Cup, we're the tactically the most organised and adaptable team in that tournament. And that's certainly what we've been working towards. We went through learning two different models of playing models this year. We had a third model in 2014. And we've taken that through two stages already, a learn to an improve phase. So this year we're going into what we call our improve phase, where we're pretty hard on the statistics that we underpin our performances with. And the players know that, you know, in an improve phase, we expect to see a few things shift along and some real accountability with that.
And further to that, John, you mentioned accountability. You were pretty vocal in voicing your displeasure over the team's recent performances. You know, again, I'm thinking back to the draw against Mexico in November, and also the loss to Chile. Should we be reading much into these results in terms of the lackluster performance? How do you go about transforming this team into a side that can regularly compete against not only the top nations, but beat nations like Mexico and Chile, who, with all due respect, you should probably be beating?
Yeah, I think, again, it will be the time of development. I mean, if we're not beating a team like Chile, sort of 2 months out from the World Cup, then, you know, you'd be looking internally and saying, we've got some challenges here. And I think when we look at the Mexico game and the Chile game, we're still in that phase. I said throughout 2013, people needed to be patient. We'd take a couple of steps back, and then we'd come forward again. And I think the performance against Brazil was a real standout. You know, Brazil, for the first time, had their best team on the pitch together. And they met a pretty stern Canadian team that actually played well. I mean, we out what we call final acted Brazil in that game. We had more crosses, shots. So, I mean, when I look at putting the best team out on the pitch, preparing them appropriately, I think this team can match any team in the world. I'm not that scared of that. I think it's been this year. We've certainly tried some new things. The Mexico game was frustrating because the day before, the team had trained brilliantly. And it was almost like we were thinking about what we were doing. Yeah, when we pulled it apart with the players, they were frustrated because it was like we played with no passion. We played the system and almost tried to perfect the system without any real passion or anyone looking to, you know, to break a line or do something with a bit of risk or flair. But I thought the second half against Mexico, with the injection of Yecker and Adriana Leon, that had a different complexion. So there was probably about 65 minutes I wasn't happy with against Mexico, and then 35 I was. And then Chile was just one of those games where they score off a set piece with a minute to go before half time, and then they bunker in. I watched Newcastle United do it to Man U recently, and you know, we've seen them sort of results where teams, you know, they get that first goal, which is all important, and then they bunker in. But what I won't hide away from is to say, look, our scoring prowess hasn't been where it needs to be this year, and I think that's been the challenge. The team played some wonderful football in that tournament, wonderful football in Brazil, and they actually played, you know, some good passages of play against Mexico, but it's what's happening in the final third that's the only challenge at this stage. But I'm hoping that'll be rectified by either, you know, the likes of Brittany Timkor, Adriana Leon stepping up and really, you know, becoming a goal a game player for this team, or the inclusion of the likes of Tancredi, Foligno, Lang, and Boulanger, who looks like she's going to be a pretty special package. So when you think, you know, that team was missing its top four players, scoring players outside of Sinclair, I think we're in a good space.
Hi, John. Kurt Larson from the Toronto Sun. You mentioned Lang in that list of the last four players you named. What's her status right now, and how's her, rehab coming along to when she might be able to participate fully?
Yeah, great question, Kurt. The progress of Cara is just progress, and it's frustrating for her as an athlete, and I think for, you know, anyone that's in and around the football environment, it's just such a slow, well laid out plan. But the reality is it's she's been rebuilt from pretty much scratch in terms of our movement patterning, and to now apply that onto a football pitch without risking injury, you know, that's the big challenge we're facing. So we're hoping throughout January she gets integrated into the practical football environment where all our work becomes functional and she actually integrates into the scrimmages. Whereas, you know, prior to the first 2 months of the centralized development program in Vancouver, she's literally done everything on the side of the pitch and only involved in, you know, non-contact things. So fingers crossed, we'll see action from Cara at the Cyprus Cup. I mean, that's one of our goals, to have her back for that. And if not, then look, I came into this with B210, who have been fantastic. They're the agency who've been helping rebuild Carr with their resources and expertise. And I said, look, if I can get that lady on the pitch for 20 minutes and she's a game changer like a Sydney Leroux is for the States, look, I can live with that. I would love to have Lang back because, you know, our goal record for Canada, she's 1-3. And behind Sinclair, there's no one else with that record. Well, I've got to give it to Belanger. She's 1-2, but she hasn't played 90-odd games.
So, you know, is it kind of a concern that you have to go out and get a player like that, a player who's kind of been out of the international game for 3 years? And you know, I think it's a fair question that is it a lack of depth that makes you go and, you know, as you said, fingers crossed, go and find someone who hasn't really, you know, played competitively in that long?
Well, look, I had to go and find Belanger again as well. I mean, that took sort of 2 years of constantly bugging Jose to come back, and now she's back in. And with Cara, you know, I was so surprised when I got here that she wasn't still in and around the squad, that a player had retired at 24 in the modern game just didn't sit right with us. And I think it's not like we're going and finding like a 33-year-old and we're dragging him out of retirement. These are young players. Like Belanger walked away from the team as a 24-year-old, and so did Lang. And they've ultimately got maybe the two or three best years of their career ahead of them. So, I mean, look, I think if it was, you know, you're dragging a 34, 35-year-old out of retirement because you genuinely haven't got any talent, then that would be a different perspective. I just think from a medical perspective, sports science, we hadn't investigated everything with these two players to ensure that they could be living the dream and you know, fulfilling the best parts of their career. If you talk about the depth, well, there is a challenge at this stage because, to be honest, the Sinclairs there, the Tancredis, these natural goal scorers, don't come along that often. You know, it seems like you get a ream of sort of full-backs, centre-backs, midfielders, but, you know, these strikers that have got a real instinct, yeah, they come along once every 3 or 4 years if you're lucky. And if you've missed one, like Sydney Leroux, or you missed one like, you know, some of these young kids that have come through the 17s and 20s program that weren't integrated effectively, then, you know, yeah, it's hunting these kids out now.
We're talking to Canadian women's team coach John Herdman on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. John, I was quite impressed with Surya Yekka in the games that she's played for Canada. What kind of future do you think she has with the senior team?
Look, she's a wonderful, wonderful kid, and what a player. I mean, you put a 17-year-old on the pitch. I think she was 16, sorry. And she just plays freely, and that's what I love about her. She hasn't amassed those scars that some of the senior players have amassed through just performances and those tough moments. And she just gets out and does what the modern fullback should do. And that's been key because I think Canada have been producing a certain type of fullback. And I think Sura breaks that mold and really sets the performance sort of criteria that we're looking for our future fullbacks. This attack-minded, you know, almost a winger, but that can defend with pace and get up and down. So, you know, she's got a big future ahead of her. But I think the key with Sura is just being careful. You know, that social-emotional corner and the mental corner of care areas we've got to manage very carefully. I mean, she was in Brazil doing schoolwork and chemistry exams, and and that's tough for kids. You know, sometimes they just want to be with their mates, not hanging around with 30-year-old women. And so we've got to get that balance right and be careful that, you know, we don't burn a player like Sura out. But, you know, I'd love to see her involved moving forward. I've just got to make sure, you know, it's the right time for her. She certainly can do it on the pitch.
John, I want to get your thoughts on Desiree Scott's move to Notts County. I think it was announced today. And if you can just kind of talk about maybe the level over there compared to the NWSL right now, where I think a majority of your players and some of the American players are playing. Can you just kind of talk about the levels, and do you think maybe more of your players might make that switch in the coming years?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, if players are moving to England, you know, all players, I think there's a reality at the minute. We've CSA, we've put our money into and our investment, and into trying to build a North American league where we can literally have players on one calendar and one continent. And outside of Sweden and Germany, I don't think there's a better league than the NWSL. So if players are heading off to England, then my concern would be, look, you know, we're strengthening, you know, the English league with quality Canadian players, but I don't think the players get anything back playing in that league at this stage. I think it's still a growing league, and it's going to take a while for that to really reach its potential. So, I mean, if Desi's gone off to Notts County, I mean, that's obviously a decision. I don't know if that's a purely football decision, whether there's a monetary aspect to that, and good on it if that's the case. But certainly I'd love to see, you know, Canadian players playing in the NWSL and supporting the North American League.
I guess, does that then open up another space for a Canadian to come in and fill that spot? And secondly, I guess that means Desiree might not have approached you about that move, because it sounds like you might have advised against it.
Yeah, I certainly have. I think, you know, I've made it quite clear to the players that, you know, I think there's three top leagues in the world, the NWSL, the Swedish League, and the German League. I mean, up until, you know, this conversation, I didn't realize it being announced publicly. I've been away on holiday. I've had a couple of emails back and forth with the player and the NWSL league. So, yeah, this is, you know, to know it's out public is news to me. But that's more my problem, because I've tried to have a little bit of a holiday with my family. So, yeah, you know, good luck to her if that's what she's chosen. But, you know, whether it opens up some new slots, I'll have to relook at my allocation. It took us about 2 months to get that whole thing put together, and we'll see how it goes.
John, how important is the FIFA U20 Women's World Cup to take place in Canada this August? I mean, do you see that as benefiting the senior team next year, or is that a tournament whose benefits is going to be more in the long term?
Yeah, look, I think that tournament is going to be fantastic for Canada. I think, one, it will give the organising committees and those people that have that responsibility the chance to, you know, test, almost do a test event, you know, without degrading the importance of this competition. You know, I would say it's going to be a fantastic opportunity to see how we put a truly world-class event on in Canada. I know the team had some responsibility in the men's 20s competition, which went ever so well. And I think this could go again. I think this could be one of those watershed moments for the women's 20 competition for maximum crowds and great participation. I know Andrew Oliveri is excited about this event, and I think he's got a good squad. It's an exciting squad with the Kadisha Buchanans and Ashley Lawrences, that Suri Yekas, Jesse Flemings, all that have had senior and national experience are going to be playing in that tournament. So, look, I think Canada are going to get spoiled in 2014 and 2015 with two massive competitions. It's just fantastic.
John, you called in U.S.-born defender Rachel Kwan for a few camps last year, but she was awaiting word from FIFA in order to get a clearance before being eligible to play for Canada. Can you give us any update on that? What's her status?
Yeah, Rachel, she's we've got her across the line, which is great news, but she ended up with an injury at the end of the NWSL, which has meant she had to go in for some cleanup work on her knee. And basically now she's going to join the squad on January 5th. So we're pretty excited. We haven't had a real good chance to see Kwan in action for Canada. She came into camp with the US and impressed. And she had a good, solid NWSL season with Chicago, pretty much playing every game. So, you know, as a young player, we're excited to see what she offers. And certainly, you know, that left-back spot is a position that we've been looking to strengthen. So it's exciting to have her in.
So just to be clear, she's fully eligible to play for Canada now?
She is. Yeah, great. She is. We managed to get all that sorted out thanks to Peter Montopoli and the team. They did a great job.
Right. Not to take away from the women's team, and I think it says a lot about the job you've done, that a lot of media members in this country have touted you as a possible future coach of the men's team. I know you're committed to the women's program and you've got your set set on, you know, next summer's World Cup, but Do you ever think about that? I mean, possibly once the Women's World Cup is done and dusted, about should Peter give you a call or Victor Montagliani give you the call and say, look, we'd like to see what you can do with the men's national team. Do you harbor any aspirations about that?
I think, firstly, the women's side is for me, a 2020 plan. I mean, I would love to say, yeah, look, one day you get into the men's side of the game. I mean, I used to coach in the men's game back in New Zealand and back in the UK. But there's something about, I've fallen in love with the women's side. It's a phenomenally rewarding job. And there's something about the amount of work that needs to be done to really leave a solid legacy in this country. And I'm talking about the infrastructure. Like, I could walk out in 2016 and go, oh, well, thank you very much, and on to your next challenge. But the reality is to get the systems, programs, vision, alignment through the country to really have a world-class, and I'm talking about a world-class development system that can make sure this Canadian team podiums every single World Cup and Olympics. That, to me, is more motivating than looking at other jobs at this stage or even looking at going into the men's job. I mean, that's what gets us out of bed in the morning, to know that, you know, when I finally hang my boots up in this country at some stage, you know, you can say, look, from a six-year-old girl right through to 23-year-olds, they know how to get into the women's national team, and the system is better than that in Japan and better than that in Germany. And if we get that right, we will get on the podium because of the number of bloody players we've got and the amount of support we've got in this country for women's football.
Good stuff, John. Listen, thanks very much for joining us, and all the best to you and the team in 2014.
Cheers, guys, and have a cracking new year, eh?
Thank you.
John. Thanks, John.
That was John Herdman. We've got to go to break, but when we come back, we'll talk to former Toronto FC striker Danny Dicchio about the Reds Youth Academy. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan and watching live on Sportsnet World.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca.
Welcome back to Soccer Central Radio on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet World. I'm John Molinaro. No James Sharman today. He's off slacking off. No, he's on holidays. Well deserved. Sitting in for Sharms is Kurt Larson of the Toronto Sun. You've been on the show before, right? Like since the new format?
Yep, I've been on, but you can't replace James Sharman.
That's right. We tried to do that 2 weeks ago with Dan Riccio, and that was a disaster. Dan's shaking his head behind the glass. We said at the top we were, obviously a big year for Toronto FC coming up on the back of seven seasons without a playoff berth. And key to the future of the club is the Youth Academy team, which is why we wanted to bring on our next guest on the show. Former Toronto FC striker Danny Dicchio, who is also coach of the Reds Youth Academy team. Danny, how are you? Happy New Year. Danny, are you there?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Happy New Year to you guys.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. I guess the place to start is with, your association with the youth team. You've been, coach there for a few years now. Can you talk about the development of the academy as you've since your association with it? How has it changed over the years?
Well, it's changed very much in the 3 years I've been with them now. When I first was offered the role to have my own team in the academy, which is what I really wanted to move into the academy for, was because I was with the first team staff and I was an assistant coach there, but I wasn't actually getting much coaching in. So my development as a coach, I thought was pretty much stagnant at that time. So Aaron Vinter came into the club and he said, look, I think this is the best thing for you. You're not going to get much coaching up in with the first team because we want to do it a different way, but we really like your experience and your enthusiasm to go with the youth team, and I took it up straight away. And then we only had two teams back in the academy in those days. We had a U17 team and a U18 team, and obviously a lot of change happened. Stuart Neely left to go to Vancouver, and we brought Thomas Rongen into the club, and he dramatically changed the whole outlook of the academy. We added some teams. We added two more teams, a U16 age group and a U15 age group. And then this year we've added another two age groups, because the big thing for me, John, was we can have as many youth teams at an older age group as possible, but for me the startling thing that I looked at was that we were getting kids in at 15 and 16 for the first time in the academy, and a lot of them, not to their own downfall, had the bad habits ingrained in them already. So I kept pushing that we needed to start an earlier age group. And this year, thankfully, the club have agreed, and the hierarchy have agreed to it as well. We're starting from like 8, 9, and our youngest team this year will be a U12 team. We'll be competing in the OYPDL U13 division. So that's very important to me, and that's what I'm going to be overlooking this year, the more younger teams, because I looked after the older teams, obviously the U18, U19 team for the past 2.5 years, but now I'm doing a French youth license, which is one of the highest youth licenses you can get in the world, and that is really concentrating on the younger age groups and dealing with them. So I'm very thankful that the club have backed me in what I want to do and what I'm training to do, and now I'm going to be specifically looking after all the really young age groups at the club.
So you won't be in charge of the senior youth academy team, is that right?
No, I'm not going to be in charge of the senior team no more. I'm going to be overlooking the U14s, U13s, U12s, the U11 pre-academy team as well.
Gotcha. Have you had any, you mentioned there before about Thomas Rongen. Have you had any discussions with Greg Vanney since he came in?
It was unfortunate that Greg came in a couple of weeks ago and I was on vacation. He just came in just on the off chance to meet everyone. So I missed the meeting there. I was on vacation, but I spoke with him on the phone when I came back. And he's also a guy I know. I've been on the French course that I'm doing. He's actually on the course as well. This course that the MLS have put on for one coach from every academy in MLS. So he was on that course. So we know of each other. We've spoke with each other many a time. So it's not like we're new acquaintances where we don't know each other's strengths and weaknesses. So hopefully we can help each other out.
Do you get a sense of, you know, what direction he's going to take the youth academy in? Is it just stay the course and build on the principles that already in place, or is it to, you know, put his own fingerprints on this and take it in another direction entirely?
I'm not sure. I'm really not sure, because I've only spoke with him briefly. I really think that he's as well as doing the academy director role, he's an assistant GM as well. So he's
right.
I think he's going to be trying to reach out to the community while also having a good relationship with the first team and the academy, trying to intertwine them two, which is very, very important for the club, I think. But I think when he sees how the academy works, he knows of all the good things that Thomas Rung has done with it, and also the staff that we have here already. I think he'll want to put his own touch in it, but I really feel that once he sees how it, the actual machine does work, he won't change a lot of it, but of course he's coming in to obviously put his own stamp on a couple of things. But once I think he sees the demographics and also a hell of a lot of politics that goes on in football in Ontario, then I think he's going to have his eyes wide open then as well, John, you understand?
Right. Hi, Danny. It's Kurt Larson from the Toronto Sun.
Hi, Kurt.
How you doing? Just wondering, you know, everything you're saying right now is great, but one of the stumbling blocks right now, I think, for this league is getting a player like Manny Aparicio up to the first team, which he's done this season, and then getting him playing time or keeping that development going.
Yeah.
How do you see that progressing in this league, you know, in the coming years? There's no USL affiliate with Toronto FC right now, so there's no way to kind of loan him out to a team. You know, where do you see that going?
Well, for me, this is one of the big things which was really, really hurting my head during the season while working with the U19 team is that we're trying to develop these boys at a young age, and we have some fantastic talent in Ontario at this moment in time. But we reach a little bit of a stumbling block that once they kind of come out of my team, Kurt, that they really are not ready to hit the first team yet, and they still need that next stage. And you're right, they need to go on to that next stage, whether it be NASL, USL, or going on loan somewhere where they can prepare themselves day in, day out, but also have the carrot at the end of the week of playing in an actual meaningful game and playing in front of fans, playing under pressure, playing in front of media, which are going to critique their performances and see how they react to that, the mental side of things, which I think is a big thing with players in North America. They're not mentally strong enough yet to compete with those stages. And we see a lot of players going over to Europe at a young age, especially from the academies, all the academies in Canada and the US, and kids coming back after, whether it be 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, they just can't handle the everyday grind of training, playing at a high, high rate and having that pressure on them. So for sure, I know that the club are very close to getting a USL affiliate for this year, and I think you'll see 4 or 5 of our younger players or our 17, 18-year-olds, top talents, go into that club and get in that valued experience that they need, Kurt.
Yeah, and those USL affiliates have to be willing to play those players as well. I mean, and I asked this question to Thomas Wrong in, you know, 10 different ways, but, you know, let's say a player comes to you of that age, 16, 17, 18, and says, you know, I'm ready to go up to the first team, and maybe someone like Ryan Nelson agrees, but he's also considering going to the NCAA. What's the deciding factor in maybe holding that player back and telling him to train in a first-team environment instead of maybe going and getting that life experience of going to school, going to college, and being in that environment and playing every day?
Well, it's a hard one because I see it from both ways, Kurt. I see it from a parent where my oldest boy is in TFC Academy now, and one of the main reasons we came across to North America was because the education was so much better than we have in England. And it's probably an avenue that I really want my oldest boy to go through. But on the other hand, if you're a young pro like the Manny Aparicios, like the Eli Rubuses and Jordan Hamiltons that I've just had in my team this year, these kids are very much similar to when I was a 16-year-old, and we have one thing in our mind, and that's to be a pro footballer. And It's a very hard thing. We've had a couple of kids this year where the parents have come in and said, look, we can't turn down a $250,000 scholarship to big schools and for the sake of our kid maybe getting a year, 2 year pro contract or semi-pro contract with an MLS club. So it's very hard. There's a lot of a gray area in there, Kurt, that I don't have the answers for. It's due to the actual player, whether he really, really wants to go that route. And we support them either way at the academy, you know. Either way, if the parents come in and say education is massive for us, we love football, we love what you've done for us at TFC, and they move on to college, we can still keep their rights as well. So it works both ways for the club and for the parents.
We're talking to former Toronto FC striker Danny Dicchio here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Danny, we've mentioned his name a couple of times, Manny Aparicio. Obviously, he graduated from the academy to the senior team this past year. Do you see, are there any other players that you think that are close or on the verge of making a similar jump this coming season?
The main one who I mentioned earlier is probably Eli Rubos. He's just been with the U-17s in the World Cup. He played at centre-back. Very, very good player. Very, very good, calm head on his shoulders, but I still feel he needs a year or two playing in a pressured environment. He played in the CSL last year for me at 16. I brought him in, and I really believed in the kid. Was he ready? Was he probably still a little bit too young? Yes, but it wasn't about winning for me in that league. It was about preparing kids, seeing if they're ready in 2 or 3 years to pop up to the first team, and I still have a lot of belief in him. I really like Jordan Hamilton as well, but I still feel he's well away from ever making it to the pros at this moment in time. He's still got a lot of learning to do, a lot of maturing to do. But the areas where I really see a lot of talent coming from is our younger age groups. The 12, 13, 14-year-olds that we have in the club now are absolutely amazing. And I'm seeing a really different culture with these boys than the older boys that I've looked after for 3 years now. And that's really surprising to me, because it just shows me how much football is really, really catching on in this city, this province. And it's exciting times, you know, guys, because when I see a young player talking about football or wearing a jersey or just having conversation about football, it's so much similar to what we have in Europe. And it's very hard to grasp for kids to have that in their culture over it, but I think we're seeing a steady incline of it now.
What are some of the factors or characteristics that you look for in a youth player when that makes you decide, yeah, he's ready to be bumped up to the senior team? I mean, is it all just about maturity level, or are there other factors at play?
I think a lot of it to do is maturity level, mental approach, how they can adapt to certain things during the game, whether it be a physical game, whether it be a quick game. Also, their soccer IQ is a big thing. The size doesn't matter to me, but the soccer IQ is massive for me. How he can adapt to different situations in the game. Is he being tightly marked? Is he finding weaknesses in the opponents himself without coaching from the sidelines? And they're the main things I'm looking for in a player.
What are some of the differences that you're seeing, you know, 3 or 4 years on, now that you've been in the academy, as to where it was when you first started? Is it have to do with training? Is it the staff overall? Is it just the overall setup of the new Kia ground up north of the city? What is it?
I think it's a combination of those things. When you look at our Kia training ground, guys, this is nothing compared to what the vast amount of kids in England have ever had to grow up in. So the kids have definitely got a bonus here in Toronto, where if you're picked to play for the academy or selected to come and train, that is a massive bonus. Just the actual environment, the atmosphere that the player is training in and getting all kinds of advice, whether it be in the gym, whether it be nutrition, whether it be tactical with their coaches and also with their schooling as well. We give all of that to the young boys. But as I said, the main thing for me, the main difference I'm actually seeing is in the younger players now. And I don't know whether that's because of a different influx of people coming into the country now. We're seeing a lot of South American kids coming through the younger age groups now. Obviously, we have a large Italian, Portuguese, German. English is starting to dwindle a little bit as well, but even African kids coming through that are very, very good players, and football is in their blood. You can see the parents, it's a big game for them. Where I feel before, we've had older kids that it's okay, they're pretty well good at the sport, but it's not in their culture. That they're either play hockey as well, the parents don't know much about the sport, but they're pretty good at it, so they just get on with it. But these younger kids, they live for the sport, which is really, really pleasing to see.
Teenagers, of course, they can be headstrong sometimes, and they often think they know more than they do, and they have cocky attitudes. So I'm just wondering, what's the experience been like of working with youth players for you on a personal level?
On a personal level, it's been really, really good. As you know, I have an older teenager. I said it before, and I have arguments with him every day, and he obviously knows a lot more than me about football and different other things. So it's hard at times when you're trying to speak or trying to teach a kid either a tactic or a technical part of the game, and they're not listening. But I must say that the kids here that we have in the academy are very, very good. They're all coming in wanting to learn. They all have ambitions to go higher, and a lot of them have ambitions to play in Europe, which is pleasing. We all want them to play for our first team one day. We all want them to be loyal and have that ambition to play for their local team, but they have higher ambitions to play for their national team and to play in Europe one day, which is pleasing as well.
Before we let you go, Danny, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Italy being drawn into the group with England at the World Cup next year. Divided loyalties for you. So who are you cheering for there?
Oh, that's pretty hard, John. So thanks for putting me on the spot. I know that it's going to be easier for me not being in the DKO household, because then a couple of days when that game's happening, my mum and dad really don't talk. And whoever wins the game is very jovial, and the other one is very solemn. So, you know what, when it's happened before, I always kind of just want a good game, and whoever deserves to win at the end of the day wins. But I really do think it's an opening game. Italy are very slow starters to a tournament. England are not a very good team at this moment. So all bets kind of land to a tie or draw game for the first game.
Oh, way to sit on the fence, guy.
I got splinters.
Listen, good stuff, Danny. Thanks for joining us. Happy New Year to you, and all the best to you and the Youth Academy in 2014.
Thanks very much for the support, guys. Take care.
Cheers.
Thanks, Danny.
Danny Diccio. It was interesting what he said about the youth players sort of graduating to the senior team, but still, you know, even though they've made it to the senior team, that their development still has to continue. And I think you raised a very valid point that often the first team experiences are so limited that it really does behoove TFC, especially this year, to get some sort of relationship with the USL team and to try at least guarantee them, if they can, some more playing time.
Yeah, I think one of the top, you know, concerns is that they also need to be graduating players from the academy who are of the level who are ready to step into a USL game. And I'm not sure all the players they've graduated maybe now or in the past would have even been able to step into that kind of environment and play. I mean, look at
I think that's fair.
You know, look at Roberts and the third keeper right now,
right?
Who turned down reportedly an NCAA scholarship to go and play, and he could have continued developing, and now he's, you know, plays maybe a half of a reserve game. So, you know, it's going to be crucial. You know, some people are calling for TFC to get its own USL team, but we'll see if that happens.
Do you think Aparicio, because for people who haven't seen him, I mean, he's a pretty small guy. Doesn't have a great deal of size. This is a pretty physical league. Guys can get, you know, pushed off the ball pretty easily. Setting aside the age question, do you fear that this may have been too soon? Just in, you know, when you take into consideration his size, maybe it would have been smarter to, you know, wait another year or so, let him bulk up a little. Do you know what I mean?
Well, in his own age group, he's, you know, he excels at the international level, right? With the U-17s, he's done extremely well. But it's tough to tell because we haven't really seen him against, you know, players of an MLS caliber or players, you know, full grown men,
right?
Because, well, there's no space for him in the team. You know, he doesn't even make the bench. But you know, I don't think Ryan Nelson would bring him up if he wasn't ready to compete physically, because he, you know, he had him up multiple times in training, and I'm sure he's been watching him, and he's seen them compete against guys like Jeremy Hall, like Matias Laba, and other guys who are established pros.
We got to wrap things up. Thanks to Dan Riccio, Matt Brown, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass for producing tonight's show. I also want to thank Kurt Larson, John Herdman, and Danny Diccio for joining us as guests. Before we let you go, just a reminder, you can watch 8 FA Cup matches, 8, on Sportsnet this week, including Arsenal versus Tottenham on Saturday afternoon. You can check out sportsnet.ca on Friday morning for a comprehensive FA Cup preview with complete broadcast info of what games we're showing on the network. Next Monday, I'll be recording a Soccer Central podcast that you'll be able to access via iTunes. And of course, James Sherman and I will be back next Thursday with another edition of the Soccer Central Radio Show. Until then, have a good weekend, and cheers for listening.